Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are on Capitol Hill and excited to talk about the news of the day. I've got on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. Hey, listeners. So glad you're with us.
And on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody. Good to be with you again.
Let's go right to what happened this week in Washington, D.C., the State of the Union. Boy, all the formalities, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the gavel, the Supreme Court, a divided Congress. Let's give a little tidbit for our listeners. They mentioned last night just in the news coverage that every State of the Union, there's a designated survivor.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you have so many people in power running our country in a certain place that you have to have somebody offsite. It was the Secretary of Veteran Affairs that was pulled aside in case there was a catastrophic event. But that's what a big deal this is.
Mm. I thought they were making a public thing out of Al Green, maybe being the
designated survivor.
They're just pulling him out of the crowd
the
right then.
The guy that gets pulled out.
Sorry.
Dan, you and I spoke a little bit off air, but the Democrats seemed demoralized. They couldn't get out of there fast enough after it ended.
Yeah. And even their post-commentary was a lot of talking head press people, mm-hmm. not the congressional leadership or representative from the minority party. And so it was really, I don't know.
That you don't know who's going to step forward.
Yeah.
Shireen, give us your take on that. I mean, Trump was vintage Trump.
Yes.
Relaxed, pushing all the buttons.
Yeah.
Making news, a showman.
Yeah. So what it was 100 minutes of punching down, mostly, interjected by what felt like some of the most sensational Dateline crime stories you've ever heard, and zero mention, honestly, of the economy. Very little discussion about what's happening in terms of inflation. Of course, we don't mention eggs. We don't mention the everyday issues that Americans are facing, but took plenty of rounds to punch down on trans folks again, to continue to punch down on Ukraine, really run the gamut of lies. And I think one of the biggest things that was difficult for me was reading. I did not listen to it because I'm not given that much time to Trump ever again. But just the kind of notion that we have, now we've moved on from draining the swamp from politicians, because he is one, right? Mm-hmm. Repeat. To draining the swamp from unelected bureaucrats while he gestures, you know, gratefully to the work of Elon Musk, who's clearly an unelected bureaucrat. So the message, I think, is confused. It was definitely vintage Trump.
I've never heard that sort of trade of phrases there, Dan, but Shireen will get it every time. Shireen, when he did talk about the economy, one of the first things he said in the speech was, I inherited this disastrous economy from President Biden.
Yeah.
This is where commentators talk about a parallel universe, meaning, you know, two visions of the world.
Yeah.
And he absolutely did not inherit. He inherited the economy that's the envy of the world.
Yes. Yeah. Which is difficult, I know, because for everyday people, making ends meet is getting tougher and tougher. Mm-hmm. But there really was no vision for how we reduce the cost of healthcare, the cost of housing, the cost of everyday goods. And in fact, what we have is a celebration of tariffs, which are a tax that American businesses pay, that they pass on to American consumers for goods that they import, right?
Yeah.
So that's additional costs that are coming our way starting this week. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just a huge disconnect. And I do think it is, I mean, he can fly as close to the sun as he wants to. Obviously, there are no consequences for his behavior. But I do think it's going to be hard to pull out of this when things, we're heading into rough times.
Dan, Shireen uses this metaphor of flying too close to the sun. This is Icarus in Greek. And the idea is you get too close and your wings melt, mm-hmm. right? So you can't fly anymore and you fall. You know, the economist in me right now, I talked to our chief economist yesterday. I'm just like seeing some things that really scare me. Mm-hmm. And what I would say to listeners is keep an eye on unemployment. That's what I would keep an eye on. And even in the address, President Trump foreshadowed what he called an adjustment period.
Yeah.
That was his way of saying these tariffs are going to look bad for a while, but in the end, we'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was clearly, we know that the president's MO is take a big swing at something, announce something big that is, you know, frustrating to those of us, you know, who do the math or watching things. And then he gets some concessions out of people and then changes directions and things go better, right? Mm-hmm. So how long does that last? Like, what's his adjustment period timeline, right? If he's a lame duck, right? Can't yeah, run
well,
for election?
I like, would say that, I mean, so the way recessions work is mm-hmm. you don't know they're coming or you do things to avoid them, right?
Yeah.
Because they're that painful. And the makings of a recession are right now are going to be a stock market that's overvalued, that's now coming back into, you know, more yeah. normal territory, unemployment that's rising because of these layoffs and all the ripple effects, consumer sentiment reacting to that, the Fed having to keep interest rates high because inflation isn't under control and actually starts to go up. And it doesn't take very long to put us in a recession by fall. And yeah. And the president, that will hurt him. That will be the wings burning on Icarus.
But if you'll remember, we were talking about the symptoms of recession mm-hmm. in October last year
yeah.
and in August of last year.
Totally fair.
So this is one of those things where I think the president is acknowledging it's likely to occur. And the question is, you know, maybe he's taking the standpoint of, well, the sooner we can get some of these symptoms cured, mm-hmm. maybe we can get to the real root of the problem. And I do believe that's like his goal. I yeah. do not understand the roadmap yet, but we'll yeah. see.
Dan, what's the term they're using? Or Shereen, you can add in. Is it the new golden age? Is that what he's saying? A new golden era?
Yeah, a new golden era. And then also,
new
yeah.
new golden visa.
A new golden visa. It's no surprise that it's all gold.
I'm bringing mm-hmm. it up, though, because our producer reminded me that asking the question, is this a new political and government era? And I told our producer, I think that's a little strong for me. Hmm. But, you know, Shereen, yeah. maybe you disagree. But the way I think of it is this is the next chapter in a long journey of trying to figure out how we make a more perfect union. Hmm. And I think what's happening right now is a Republican Party, two things, responding to overreach, mm-hmm. which we've talked about. But yeah. the second thing is I'm absolutely convinced that the economy has left many Americans behind. Hmm. And there's a reaction to that. Yeah. And the reaction is we got to go change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's a reaction to it. But then there's also a narrative that people hear over and over again, especially if you spend time on far partisan media, about how we are better off pitting against each other mm-hmm. than we are addressing these kind of bigger social problems, right? So, I mean, this is the hallmark of right-wing media to suggest that we need to demonize immigrants because we don't have the jobs that we want or we, you know, or the homes that we want or whatever that may be. There's a whole line of activity, a very specific media ecosystem environment mm-hmm. that tells us to hate our neighbors. And I think that is contributing in great ways to the political moment that we're in.
Yeah.
Well, but fair, I guess I understand that. The hard part, I struggle with that, Shereen, is for the last 4 years, you know, leading into the second Trump presidency, you legitimately had an abandonment of border security, right? Not just like, hey, let's let some people in or let's, you know, create more visas. Hey, let's solve the problem. It was, no, let's just open the gates. Let's remove these. And I think.
So you're saying there was no border control at all in the last 2 years?
No,
you
no,
believe
no.
there was none?
I'm just thinking there has been an opening of the borders that have been changing. And it's
asylum
not a secret.
Seekers.
Asylum
yeah.
seekers, yeah. you know, but not just that. I mean, you're just talking about conflicts at the border. Mm-hmm. You know, over the last 4 years, there were like 100,000 conflicts in February. And this last year, this last February, there were like 2,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Conflicts, but you mean crossings.
Well, just incidents with border security where they're keeping track of everybody going through, right?
Yeah,
and it's just that you can't have that kind of abandonment of an important policy in the country and expect the country to stand with you. I don't think there's hate. I just think there's abandonment of policy and expectations, and you've got to meet those expectations if you're the elected leader.
Yeah, I guess I just want to emphasize that there is hate. We're seeing just increased violence.
There's not as much hate.
There's yeah. increased violence targeting immigrant communities. That yeah. is happening.
I know, but you want to see hate. It's not there.
Hey, Shereen, just to end off this segment, I want to give this Alyssa Slotkin, the senator from Michigan, newly yeah. elected Democrat, who gave the minority, you know, address afterwards. Can you set that up for us? Because part of why I say that is a big part of what people are looking for is who's going to step up
yeah.
and represent, in my case, the political middle.
Yeah.
And Andy Beshear, the governor of
Kentucky,
and this Alyssa Slotkin were pretty impressive to me.
Yeah. I think these are both really impressive leaders. And I'll just add that I think, you know, that kind of upper Midwest sensibility certainly comes through with a person who did kind of bring it back to those everyday kitchen table issues. Yeah. And
she was middle class, strong national defense and yep. protect democracy.
And protect democracy. Yeah. And I think, I want to maybe touch slightly on what I do think ultimately will win out, which is a message about hope, a message about how we move forward together. Mm-hmm. And there, that is not what we are getting from this president. That is not what he traffics in. That's not what we're getting from J.D. Vance. We're not going to get it from that kind of leadership. But we can start to hear it in places where it really matters. And I would just encourage people to open their minds to the notion that across party lines, we have to be looking for people who are advancing a different agenda.
Yeah. Dan, this Senator Slotkin, 3 tours in Iraq, worked in both the Bush and the Obama White House. She said her mom was a Democrat and her dad was a Republican, and she won in her state, and so did Trump. Mm-hmm. So she was picked to do this for a certain reason. Yeah. So to my political centrist leanings, I liked this woman.
Well, notice she stayed away from things that over the Biden administration kind of, in some ways, I would say, eclipsed his presidency and took him in ways, I will say from the outside, it appears he was letting others determine the direction of his administration. And he was letting the, you know, Shireen likes to use the culture wars, right? Well, he was doing his best to provide the opposite front, right? And give the low fruit, the low hanging fruit talking points to the Trump administration on things that clearly most of America did not support. We're talking about 70-80% about men and women sports. Like, go down the list of some of those things, and everybody's like, we've kind of had enough. Let's take our country back and focus on things that are important. And I'll say Senator Slotkin did a good job of trying to recenter that. And that is a Democratic Party that I think Trump should be afraid of.
Or that you might like to join.
No. We should
keep an open mind.
We should close for our next segment. But when does the honeymoon period end for this president, Dan?
I think when unemployment starts.
That's where I am too.
I think if you start to see it spikes in unemployment and you see interest rates staying stagnant, or even going up.
In economic history, of recessions, they say the most consistent indicator is the beginning of the rise of unemployment.
I agree, and I just have to add cutting people's health care.
And everybody worries about affordable housing, right? DC, believe it or not, the average price of homes in the last 90 days has gone down $150,000 within a mile of
the markets
the Beltway. So.
Yep. Hey, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the close of this legislative session locally. We got tax cuts, higher ed, public ed, vote by mail. Dan's going to lay it all out for us. So stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are in the final days of the 2025 general legislative session. Senator Dan McKay's got some updates for us. Dan, I'll prompt you. Tax cut. What are we going to see?
Okay. So if somebody's really excited, they can go to le.utah.gov and they can start pulling up some bills. The one to, keep your eye on, House Bill 106, is by Kay Christofferson. And that one will give you the insight to where we're giving basically $125 million in tax cuts. It's a 0.5, so we'll be down to 4.5 as our income tax
instead
rate.
Instead of 4.55.
Right, and then we're increasing the child tax credit so that it will be it's about a $4 million fiscal note, but we'll take it so that child tax credit extends from the age of, right now it goes from 0 to 4, and we're extending it to 0 to 5. So we're trying to provide support for young families. There's an investment in child care opportunities so that employers will get a income tax credit. It's around $2 million for, helping provide child care on the job.
That
surprises me, but I'm glad for it. And I also,
who was the leader on that one?
It surprises me too. And I can't remember. I apologize. One of our freshmen that was really excited about it.
Wow.
And I'm trying to remember the name. I'll remember it in a minute.
I was going to say, I was disappointed to see that the support for the diaper bank did not go forward, but it does look like support for lunch. School lunch is moving. How's that doing?
Diaper bank is it's morphing, and she's doing a good job. And I think the minority leadership is giving her help. I think you're going to see the bill move forward in a different way. And I think that will be helpful. I'm not sure where the school lunch piece is yet either.
Yeah. I'll never forget having my child and the day that I went and picked up diapers and just being so grateful that I was in a position in my life where that wasn't a stressful, because they're expensive, right?
Yeah.
Where that wasn't a stressful moment. And the guy who runs the diaper bank is named Vic, and he's an incredible community leader, just an absolute angel of a human being. And the demand is massive for diapers. So I really have a huge heart for the work that happens at the diaper
bank.
Dan,
and then we'll get Shireen's commentary. What do you see in higher ed, public ed?
Goodness gracious. So higher ed, you see there's going to be some budget allocations, right? And so they're going to put
And our listeners should know those started as cuts, became allocations.
Yep. And so now they're going to come back and make a case for earning those
million
back. So, yeah, it's about 60 million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, we've got some new buildings that are coming in. Higher ed's always excited about their buildings.
For sure. Public ed, our school teachers got a raise.
Yep. Got school teacher raises, 4.5% on the WPU, but even above that, it's 4% on the WPU.
Yeah, it's actually what's required by law.
Okay.
It's required by law.
Okay. See, this is why I told my colleagues, take that out of the law, because you get no credit for it.
Well, you're required to do it.
No, we required ourselves to do it, and we can unrequire ourselves to do it.
You will.
Actually, you're convincing me it's a good idea. So,
Shireen, be careful.
But, I've never convinced him of anything.
No, she's convincing me. Yeah. I'd say that the biggest though is, we've got $1,450, I think, per teacher that we're doing as far as bonuses for teachers this year. Felt like that was important to do. And then we're putting additional money into the Fitz All Scholarship. And, as part of that, we're creating some additional accountability for that money as well. I mean, that is a lot as we're unwrapping all the budget.
That's some good accomplishments.
So those are your public dollars going into private schools. I am grateful to see that there's more control on that, because I think it does taste pretty sour. It's a bitter pill for families who are, making ends meet, paying their taxes in so that people can pay for their kids to have ski lessons, right? So seeing that curtailed is good, but I think ultimately is bad policy.
Dan, on this point, will the accountability get rid of taxes for ski lessons?
Yes, it will.
Yes,
it will be very limited.
Yeah. So that's an improvement. There are, I think, in the education realm, it has been just like a deeply punitive session for education. And I would hope to see that there's, movement going forward, and always just want to acknowledge the absolutely difficult work that teachers are doing to try to keep their heads above water and in a state where I'm sure they feel, unappreciated.
Shireen, did you watch as this Beehive Development Agency was proposed and then sort of put on pause?
Yeah.
Give us from the left some of your thoughts.
So this is a bit of an interesting one to me, because I guess maybe it's my own trauma of having gone through approving housing development when I was on the county council. But there is just, I think, such a difficult road path that people have to follow when they are in elected office, and you understand that we have a deficit in housing, we need more housing, and you have communities that do not want it in their backyard. Nobody wants it in their own backyard, but they all understand fundamentally that we're behind on housing units and it's driving up the cost. So I thought that maybe this was an effort to come in from the state and potentially take, some of that away from local governments. I think that's generally bad, but there are elements of the concept that make sense to me, having sat in those seats.
Dan, when I saw Senator Cullimore was the sponsor of it, I thought this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he's a powerful senator.
Yeah, this just shows you the culture of the timing of the legislature. The later things come out, the more the scrutiny they get and the higher they, kind of raise the ires, because everything else is starting to settle down. And then everybody can start to focus on things that aren't settled, right?
Yeah.
And this is just an example of it got out a little bit late and there wasn't a long runway of preparation for it. And so I don't think it's going
to
make it.
Dan, you have to leave us, but will you give our listeners the latest on the Utah demonym?
Oh, this is our biggest bill of the whole session. We've got it officially into code that we now, for sure, New York Times, they listen.
They're listeners.
They're avid listeners.
We get emails all the time.
Yeah. Utahn is spelled UTAHN in state code. And it's a big deal. It's really
because
important.
Because in the AP, it's A. What is A?
Yeah. In style guides, you get different. The interesting thing is in D.C., when they're referring to Utahn, the government style guide says the UT has the proper spelling.
Yeah.
But private
AP
parties.
Doesn't.
Yeah. The AP and the New York Times. So,
well, congratulations. We'll let you run off to whatever negotiation you're going to.
Well, I would just ask you, Natalie, from your perspective, do you think we were just talking about the federal level? Is this a change in government? Are you seeing from your many years working closely with the state legislature here? Do you think we're in a different era of government?
I don't.
Here.
Yeah, I don't. With the exception that legislative power is more than it's ever been.
Yes.
So that's different. But, and is that a tipping point or is it a chapter?
Yeah.
Do you, and at some point in the future, elect a very, very popular governor that knows how to use the power of the bully pulpit to rally public support to his or her desires and move in with, you know, pace and power to make things happen? That could happen.
Could happen.
That's why I don't think it's, you know, like a tipping point. It's more, there's been an accommodation by current governors. And Cox, under the idea, Governor Cox, under the idea of disagree better, is a collaborator.
Yeah.
The Utah way, the what we do. And so he tends to lean towards negotiating things behind the scenes and then coming out together.
Yeah. I guess I would say the reason it feels like a tipping point for me is that we saw so many, while it came across multiple bills, so many blatant attacks from the legislature on the judiciary. Mm-hmm. And that to me suggests we've seen quite a bit of concentration of power away from the governor into the legislature. And then a legislature that's unhappy with the way the judges are behaving, which is honestly, you know, interpreting the law, interpreting our constitution and trying to pull back on that. That's why it feels different to me.
Yeah, I get it. There, a theme for me of this session is a lot of things started out pretty bad and then they got better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so give some examples. Pretty hard on the solar industry and then they kind of recovered and got more, all of the above.
Yeah.
You know, let's go with some of the tax cut things.
Yeah.
You know, they start out really big and we're going to do these things and then they see the reality and they have to kind of rein it in. The Beehive Development Agency first concentrated all this power in an unelected body and then they said, oh, we'll only do this if we get local
buy-in.
Yeah. And I just saw a lot of these go from even in higher ed, we're going to cut you to no, we're going to reallocate.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an example of a legislative body, you know, kind of moving its elbows, flexing its muscles a little bit, but ultimately getting to a good place.
Yeah.
So I give them pretty good marks for that. Even with the judiciary, Shireen, they came out wanting to really, you know, do some things that exerted their power over the judicial branch. And in the end, they backed off.
Yeah. I guess I would say that what I've noticed is that typically it takes 2 or 3 years for some of these bigger, you know, moves to pass. So if you had concerns as a listener about what you saw happening in terms of that power grab, you need to let your representatives know now.
Yeah.
Because they'll try it again. They'll try it again next year. And there's just no reason to believe that they won't. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really important kind of piece of this is that to me, it's a little bit of a roadmap. Mm-hmm. Like, here's where we're going.
Yeah.
So I think that's concerning. I'll also say what ultimately happened, and I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to ask Senator McKay about why he would vote to really make our vote by mail process more restrictive and less effective. So I think the ultimate outcome of what was HB 300, I believe, mm-hmm. was the vote by mail, ultimately was a desire to kind of end it. Became much better.
Yeah.
But still, I don't understand why we would see Republicans continuing to attack a system that benefits them election after election in this state. I think that's concerning. Mm-hmm. I think it plays into, honestly, a false narrative to misinformation about how our voting system works in this state. It works very well.
Yeah. One that I'm watching pretty closely, Shireen, is this independent commission pre-election debates.
Yeah.
The bill that's trying to kind of, you know, change that up. I was a devotee of our former governor, Lieutenant Governor Olene Walker. She's the one who helped start the Utah Debate Commission. Yeah. And, you know, I like how it's structured, but it looks like that's a place where if they don't get it done this session, we'll see it again and keep an eye on that one.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious why that, again, feels like a solution in search of a problem. I, as you know, participated in that when I ran for the United States House of Representatives. And it was honestly a really professional and well-organized process that I thought we had a little bit of an excitement where somebody jumped on stage. They could maybe use more security, but they did end up, I think, ultimately making that decision going forward. But there is, I think, a lot that the group that has come together, that's put that together, has given to us.
Well, and I'll say I have you know, moderated maybe 4 or 5 times for the Utah Debate Commission. And I will tell you, interestingly, in my experience, like they keep the questions that I'm moderating from private until right before.
Yeah.
You know, even as the moderator, you're kind of kept in the dark a little bit.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting because they're so trying to protect fairness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got to end the discussion here. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners, Shereen?
I guess I
was going to say that there's one more vote that counts, and that's the governor.
That's the governor.
We got a veto power here.
Which he does not use very much. I guess I would just say, I think for a lot of our listeners, they're likely kind of more on my side or your side of things politically. I think this is a very fraught time, and I would just suggest to people, you can do good in your own community. You can do good in your own neighborhood that will feel better than the doom scroll. So just find that place where you can go to work and do it.
Yeah, and remember that hope is not optimism. Hope is action.
It's action.
And so there's never time to be more hopeful, because you need to be the change you want to see.
That's 100% right.
All right. Hey, that's a wrap. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with Shereen Gourbani, Dan McKay, and Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.